If I could respond to that one, I'm not sure that John actually said such a thing. But I would say, I will go as far as I think the team would go in as a kind of at least a majority. It may not go over to the, there's certainly dissenters, but I would say that in general, I think people are beginning to think that there was a dead body under a cloth, but even that we cannot prove. I don't think that anyone would go beyond that statement to thinking that it's the burial cloth of Jesus. I don't think that anyone has allowed themselves the privilege of having that kind of an opinion, simply because we have access to the information, and until the carbon dating comes out, I, for one, would not like to be made the fool of. And I think a carbon date is essential at this time.
Eric?
Oh, I don't think that would be appropriate. I don't know. I think we'd have to raise our hand first to see if the team would want to raise their hands. So, I'm sorry, that's just not appropriate. Please come up here.
I didn't want to be quite so public about it. Senora Ciliato just went downstairs and escaped, but while I was eating lunch with her, she suggested something that, this is mostly for the team, while I've got you all in one spot. The idea of the aloes being a desiccant and the idea of there being lots and lots of it in the tomb as opposed to what we thought of and sprinkled around as a powder as opposed to what we thought of, it's pretty interesting with respect to the textile question over there, I think. I don't know whether a desiccant would make linen more stiff or whether its weight would press it down, give it a little bit closer contact, and tend also to draw moisture from the body more than we had normally thought through the linen to give a greater image. I just tossed that out. I thought it was a very interesting idea.
Okay, so that was on the part of, who was that?
Maria Ciliato.
Maria Ciliato.
Okay,
do you have a question on that side?
I have one question over here.
My name is Joan Peek, and I'm from Clifton Park, New York. And as I was listening to the talk, I was interested in a particle talk about the absence of myrrh and aloe type particles. And Dr. Marie Gambishi, is that her name? Ciliato's work would also seem to indicate that we should find particles of that in the shroud. Then when I saw the mites in Dr. Rigi's talk, I wondered, could it be possible that the mites might have eaten the aloes and the myrrh? They must have been there to eat something. Something must have attracted them. And I just throw this out as an idea that occurred to me.
Anybody want to comment on that one? Al, I'm talking about team members commenting, so.
I think you should be aware of what we said. We've tested Coptic and Pharaonic mummy cloths that Dr. Ricci provided. We have no trouble finding the presence of vegetable dyes on those. They've existed longer even than this is postulated to have existed. We do not see any evidence of vegetable dyes in the shroud fibers.
I'm sorry. As far as I'm concerned, there's no evidence of any aloes or any myrrh anywhere near contact with that cloth. I think the reason we don't see it is because it wasn't there.
I think that's also the conclusion of Dr. Rigi, is that not, that he did not find any?
If you want to say, Dr. Rigi tells me, you want to say that about the, what the mice have to eat, is that they have a metabolism based on cellulose, they just eat cellulose, or they eat each other. They don't eat anything else than the cloth to eat.
And am I correct in saying that he did not find any myrrh or aloes?
Yes.
That's so. We have two separate, well, actually more than that, we have not found any myrrh or aloes, period.
Or he does not see myrrh.
He doesn't see myrrh.
No, he doesn't see myrrh.
Question on your side, John?
The absence of the carbon dating tests is a limitation in determining the age of the cloth, yet we've seen a couple slides come up here on the coins and the eyes. And I was wondering why there has not been any discussion as to the relevancy of the coins and the eyes to to determine a tentative dating, if you already have assumed that it is a dead body who was crucified, then the coins would seem to be a relevant determination of age.
I'm glad you asked that question. We have, I think Vern Miller has done, the reason I am glad you asked the question is that there have been an awful lot of things in the press about the work of Father Filas on identifying some kind of structure on the coins. And Vern Miller met with Filas and looked extensively at some possible images that might be what Filas is looking at, and I thought Vern Miller was prepared to take that. Are you, Don?
No, well, I can't speak for Vern.
Is Vern here?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, would you find him in the meantime? Don, do you want to comment on that?
Okay, just pending Vern's input, no one else that I know in looking at the images has seen the characters that Father Filas reports, okay? So none of us can say, yes, they are there. Neither can we say they are not there until you've examined every bit of data. Okay, so basically, since we cannot say they are there or not there, there's not much you can say. Now, that, we'll see what Vern has to say.
Yeah, and you notice Don says that he knows of. I think many of us have seen what Filas is talking about, and our opinion is that we just don't interpret it the same way. We think he's looking at something that is just an artifact. And when Vern shows up, I'll put him on, but here he is. Vern, would you come up and comment on the possibility of seeing inscriptions on coins? Okay, we also had an additional thing that artifact may be handicraft, so Vern's going to explain artifact, or he can use another word. I didn't mean to throw that.
Okay, well, I'm not sure where we are. We have a slide on the screen now to discuss that.
We would, or do we want would to... get it. Would you turn on the projector and put the first slide that's left on it? Would you turn it on? Just there's a switch there.
Some electrical engineer or something. I had an opportunity to work with Father Filas about a month ago. We spent a week going over all of the photographs that were taken in the 1978 investigation. That was fast.
That was the one.
Yeah, and then it'll go from that there on. And we were looking to find anything in the present photographs that he sees in these pictures from the Henri series. So I'd be happy to explain his words to, or as I understand them, is what he's saying, but this is a first century coin. Not in here. Okay.
Could we dim the lights a little bit, please?
Yeah, I think you should here. But this is a first century coin, a lepton coin, and it has this stamp, a Litovus, and there's some lettering around this point. Now, of course, this coin is in existence, and it certainly isn't the one that was on the shroud, but Father Filas feels like there were other coins, and it might resemble this particular issue. Now, I understand these are all hand-stamped, and we do have some coin experts that will explain that better, and that they're pretty individual, that not one or no series would look identical. Now, encircled in red here, this is very difficult to see, is a copy of a copy of a copy of the 1933 photographs. And these characters through here are what Father Filas suggests are these coins. So once we plant that in our mind, and I suggest that to you, you'll probably be able to see them. Now, the question has been is why can we see them rather clearly there and not in the other photographs? And the other question is, are these artifacts of this coin or a coin like this? And I have an opinion about that from studying the other photographs. If you go on to the next series, maybe that'll help a bit. Now, we're looking in this eye, and you'll have to stay right on that focus so that it doesn't go in and out. We want to look at the weave. And there are some details, and these will be landmarks that I can point to as we go on. Now this little marking here is a stain of some type. I haven't identified that, but I'll show it to you in color as well. And that's our landmark, and we go up past this dark area and into right here. This is the point where he sees these letters, and you can see some character there. Now this is the reverse image, so when we see dark or light here against dark, of course it's the reverse of that. It's a darker image against the light part of the cloth. And when we go back, it's going to be a reverse of that. But my contention is if you can see it in any one of them, you should see it in all of them. And I'll get to the end of my, what I feel about it is that what we're seeing is light and shadow, crowns of the threads and shadows cast from cylindrical shape, threads and fibers, and dependent on which way this cloth was photographed from the lighting, if it was raking lighting, from what particular distance will enhance those shadows, make them larger or smaller, and the highlights larger and smaller, and you can make out anything you want to out of it. Now, go on to the next slide, and I can show you again. Stay right on the focus. See, again, these slides were reversed left to right so that we could stay in the same area. So there's our landmark. Focus once more, please. You're past it. You've got my close-up eyes, and I got your long-distance eyes. There we are. Now here's the mark, and this would be that point, and you can go right straight up from that, and this is the area we're looking at. Now you can't see anything, even from the back of the room there, is that right? Now let's go to the next one, which would be closer, and I think this is, now we're up here close. We can see the weave very well, and all I have to do is find that landmark, which is a big gewgaw. Right there, I think. Is that it? Oh, yes, this is the blood stain. Keep going in and out of that focus, because
I think it's below what you're
supposed to see. If you're far away, you'll be able to see it better than I will.
It's off the side. It's just below the little.
Okay. So this would be the area, and this is a dark spot here. And this here, well, right in here is where we're supposed to see those lettering characters. And if you stare here long enough, and I tell you long enough, you'll be able to see it. Now this, I believe, this is the Litowus. Now I spent a week with it, so I know right where I'm looking. Now, you know, the thing that Eric and I have talked about is that I've looked at a lot of photographs and computer enhancements and things of this area, and there are some very interesting features, and I'd like the research to continue, and I think that if it went slowly, I'm certain that there are some spherically shaped objects there that have a dimension to it from what I've been able to observe, and I'm concerned about identifying characters that couldn't be resolved in something like this. Yes. There. This is the lettering?
Yeah. That's too small.
Yeah, that's it, huh? Okay, if you buy that one, I've got a bit of marshland in New Jersey I'd like to show you. Okay. Now if you would go to the next slide, please, because, see, one of the things we're looking at, high contrast representations of this same image that I'm showing you here in color now, is much more less contrast, and we see into the shadows and into the highlights of the detail, so nothing has been removed. And your eye can't put physiologically all those things together. Now, if we can find the same place, is that the same place, do you think, that we were just looking?
There's your mark down at the bottom.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now, we go right up this series of threads, and we can follow the weave pattern. If you'll focus once more for me. There, that's good. Now, we'll go up to here. And right there, this area right in here is what we're looking for as far as lettering. Drop it a little. Well, I think that demonstrates pretty well what we're dealing with anyway. There are some various densities in the same color, and there are some densities in other color. And if we filter and play around with these, we can pull them out and make it show almost anything we want to.
Okay, we can have the house lights up and the slide projector off. I think the point here is that we have tried to look at this, and we do not see any substance to what he is seeing. And what Vern said at the end there is that in order to see the full picture of what he's saying he sees, we must examine things on the cloth which are different colors and due to different lighting conditions, which means that they are simply accidents in the way that the thing is there. That's the way that we're interpreting them. At the moment, we do not find any credibility to it.
Eric, do you want to tell them where the idea or first suggestion of coins came from?
I hate to do it, but it was...
No, I think it's...
Jackson and I did this.
That's why I asked you to do it.
Yeah, all right. There appears to be some kind of a disc-shaped thing there, and Vern has found that. It does seem to be slightly elevated in intensity above the background. Some time ago, when we found this distance information in the image, if you were to raise the, get a relief from that on the VP8, you can see these disc-shaped things elevated slightly above the location of the eyes. John and I ventured a comment that they might be coins. And I guess we all have things we wish we had not said. But at the moment, my feeling is that I don't say they are, I don't say that they are not. I think it's more important that we understand the image formation process than look at these kinds of things. And so I understand, and the only reason we were interested in is, like someone mentioned, that if you could date a coin, you could date the image, so to speak. It's very sort of exciting kind of a thing, but at this point in my life, I think that's something that we have spent enough time doing at the moment and has led to nothing which we could call definitive, or even approaching that position.
Question. I'd just like to add just one little thing to that. When we first looked at this three-dimensional image, it does appear that there are little disc-like objects on the eyes if you interpret the image in that manner. And I think that was really the genesis of this idea of coins, but to be able to go and read any possible inscriptions on such objects, even they are, as Eric says, coins. And I think that ought to at least be seriously considered. I do feel that. But to go to the point where you say that this is somehow, you can read inscriptions on this with all the noise that exists on that image, is, you've seen how difficult that is.
You have the next question. Please identify yourself.
Roger Richards. And like most of the audience, I couldn't get tickets to all the sessions, so I'm going to take a risk here of asking the obvious. It's been pointed out several times that the image is only on the upper fibrils of the cloth, that it only appears on one side and not on the other side other than the fluids that seep through. That's been referred to as the top of the cloth. What I'd like to know is which is the inside of the cloth and which is the outside of the cloth as it was wrapped about the body. The two theories that were on the last summary slide, and most theories that you can think of quickly, would seem to imply that the image would form on the cloth closest to the body, that side of the cloth. We don't know what form the image, I don't think we can really rule out immediately that it did not form on the outside. But if it did form on the inside, then it would be not only a negative type image, but it would be a mirror image. So my question is, the important point that I suppose if you think of it in that way is that the side wound would actually have been on the left. My question is, has that been spoken to at all yet?
Well,
are the slides flipped? Let's just start.
If that were the case, if it was formed from the inside and you were looking at a mirror image, as you say it would be, a wound on the left side would appear on the right side of the person image. It turns out that the thing on the shroud is on the left side of the image, which means that it would be on the right side of the body underneath. So either you saw some things backwards, which is very easy to do, happens all the time. Slide goes in backwards.
Well, in other words, you're assuming that the image did in fact appear on the inside.
Well, of course you can't rule out the idea that the image would have formed on the outside. I don't know if anybody wants to speak to this. But the blood stains go away.
First thing you should point out, we don't have any evidence that it actually wrapped the body. That's an opinion, not a scientific fact.
Yeah, that's true. And the cloth body distance information that we have, the correlation curve, has come from the assumption that there was a body under cloth and get a correlation curve. And the only problem with that is you would like to close the loop and say, therefore, it was a body under cloth that caused the image, except for without the mechanism, you really cannot close the loop. It might have been several step process getting to the image. But that's the only thing I know of that we have that even addresses that question. And as Adler has just said, there is no definitive proof that there was a body under the cloth. As I say, it's an opinion that some of us share, but not everyone. Thank you.
Dr. Ciliato said that other shrouds have been found with images, facial images on them, which leads one to believe that that phenomenon maybe is not that uncommon. I wonder if the team has any plans to investigate the images on any of those shrouds for comparison purposes to see if the mechanism is the same and the information that they get off those shrouds is similar to this information.
Unless somebody in the group has a response to that, my understanding is I have seen pictures of these images and they are smeared and they are not similar to the shroud image in that the resolution is damaged. I also understand that those images penetrate the cloth and they are more images due to decomposition than due to, unknown causes. I don't know, more than that I don't know, and is there anybody who would contradict what I've just said? I see Dr. Rigi from Turin shaking his head yes, so I think that that must be the case. Is that essentially correct, ma'am? On the maybe Joan or Dr. Ganella, and we might speak to that. Could we take the next question while we may have something to add to that?
I'm Tim Mulrooney from Bell Laboratories, and my question is kind of an easy one. I've seen most of the slides here have figure one, figure two, and I've seen a couple of the articles. Is there going to be where I can get a copy of all these published papers or a list of where they're published? Some of these are in pretty obscure journals.
The answer to that is that eventually there will be a set of reprints. The journals, I think, are not so obscure. For example, I wouldn't call Applied Optics an obscure journal. And archaeology I think you can find these things. We do have a bibliography available. I believe if you contact anyone here, they could probably give you a bibliography of things that are already published. But the answer is that there's, at least that I know of, there are at least two plans to do, in one case, a partial binding of reprints, possibly reset. and the other one is simply a binding of reprints, and that is when we get a significant number of papers that we think are none coming in for a while, we'll essentially end the project with the final report, which will be composed of a set of reprints, probably very limited. I don't know who you'd get in touch with to get such a thing.
Tom DiMahalo, do you have anything to add to that question as to where people can go to get information?
He said no. Dr. Ganella will have a comment here.
It was Mrs. Ciliato that asked me to tell that some of these images that she saw or have been reported have something similar as appearance to the contact images that Pellicori show, and they are very broad features of face. They have nothing like the resolution of the shroud, but there may be something similar there is.
Okay, so that essentially confirms what we thought. Go ahead, next question.
My name is Greg Sherman from Clinton, Connecticut, and excuse me if this question has already been brought up. I've only been here for the latter part of today. What brought me here today was I was reading a newspaper article about the shroud, and it stated that there was no evidence of holes or tears in the shroud which would have been there if the body was removed by somebody tearing or unwrapping the shroud to remove a body. Is there any scientific evidence as to how the body could have been removed if, per se, there was a body in there?
I have a hypothesis. Lift the cloth off the body. That's a hypothesis. I suppose we'd have to test it with the observations.
Let me ask a question. Are you asking are referring to the notion that blood stains are so-called intact? Is that what you're referring to? Well, I'll try to give my response to that. When I was in Turin looking at the shroud, one of the first things that struck me when I looked at the blood stains was that, first of all, they looked red. Number two, it was material that was on the cloth. And number three, this is the important one, I think, the relevant thing, is that the blood stains look like they're coming apart. They're blading, they're crumbling. And how one could make a statement in light of that as to what the initial condition of those blood stains were when you see them today as being eroded, I don't think that one can make that kind of a conclusion just based upon what we see today.
I agree.
I'm Bridget Smith from Croton on the Hudson, New York. I have a question regarding the blood. But first, I would like to make a comment as a normal person. As a believer, I didn't need any additional proof. I want to thank the scientists for all their work. I feel as though I've been taking part in a two-day autopsy with very, very technical data, and I think some of us really just came to mourn. My question on the blood is, in all this time, wouldn't real blood have decomposed, and wouldn't it have caused the decomposition of the cloth?
Dr. Heller?
No.
I think that the chemistry of the blood is well understood at this time, and that we are seeing degraded blood in all sorts of stages, from whole blood down to the final product.
I'm Giles Carter from Ypsilanti, Michigan, and I would like to ask a question of the pathologist if he would take a look, or maybe remembers the picture of the fingers. We had a comment in a paper yesterday, I believe, on the too long fingers due to possibly the distortion produced by the drape of the cloth. However, if you look at the, unless being an abnormal person, my fingers are not normal. If you look at the length from the tip of the finger to the base of the finger and compare that length to the tip of the finger to where the nail was driven through the wrist, it would seem to me that, according to the photographs that I've seen here, that distance is too great to be just an elongation of the finger. In other words, if the finger itself were elongated, you would still have this ratio being about 1 to 2, whereas it looks to me like it's maybe 6/10, well, 1 to 1.4, something like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I believe that the pathologist had to leave it. I think that, John, would you like to mention, or is Bill Urquhart?
It's a good observation.